What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt. Is déjà vu more than just a quirk of the brain? Is there always a rational explanation for the paranormal? Should one believe reports of unexplained phenomena? If you've asked yourself these questions before, follow in the footsteps of paranormal podcaster Blake Elrich and delve into the mysteries of the Unknown 9 universe.
Unknown 9 Awakening is the action-adventure video game at the heart of the Unknown 9 narrative universe. You play as Haruna, an audacious heroine with the ability to venture into the fold, a mysterious dimension that overlaps our own. On her quest for powerful hidden knowledge, Haruna, who's portrayed by Anya Chalotra, will learn to master her unique connection to the fold, which allows her to channel its powers into our world. But such power does not go unnoticed. She quickly becomes the target of the Ascendants, a splinter faction of a secret society known as the Leap Year Society, who want to use the Fold to alter the course of human history. Their confrontation will take them across the world, from the sands of Mauritania and perilous Indian jungles to the Gothic landscapes of Portugal.
Get ready to dive into a mysterious paranormal dimension. Unknown 9 Awakening releases on October 18th, 2024 for PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X and S, and PC. Pre-order your copy today and learn more about the Unknown 9 universe at unknown9.com/nightmare. That's unknown9.com/nightmare.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to the horror movie podcast for the casually obsessed. I'm John.
I'm Kimmy.
And today we are talking about voodoo. We are talking about Wes Craven's The Serpent in the Rainbow. And this is a first-time watch for the both of us.
Yes, yeah. I know. That's a rare occurrence for the both of us.
Especially a Wes Craven movie. And it's been on the watch list for a long time. It's one of those ones, I've talked about it before, where, you know, like, we should watch that. I want to watch that. We should save it for the podcast. Fuck. Okay, I guess I'll watch it in 5 years' time.
It's been on the podcast list for 6 years, I think.
Forever. I love the trailer for this movie. I keep putting it in pre-shows with the Fiend Club watch parties that we do. I just fucking love that line. Bill Pullman, he's like, he's on death's door, he's pale, he's gaunt, and he's like, don't bury me, I'm not dead. It's such a good fucking line.
That's a banger, John. That's a banger.
Also, Wes Craven doing a voodoo movie? Let's go. Like, I knew it was going to be crazy at the very least.
I underestimated this movie and I underestimated Wes Craven. That was like a fucking tongue teaser. Underestimated Wes.
What? A cardinal sin for this podcast, frankly.
I thought this movie was going to be way schlockier than it was. I thought it was going to be... like, most voodoo is not voodoo in movies. It's not accurately portrayed. It's silly. It's only evil. This movie does such a great job at doing the voodoo religion, encompassing it.
Yeah, like the cultural importance of it.
Yeah, it was genuinely scary. It was not played for schlock at all.
Some incredible sequences in this fucking movie.
There was nothing silly about it. I fucking enjoyed it.
I'm sure it's way off the mark in explaining actual voodoo, like, and the actual practices. I'm not an expert in it, but as far as voodoo's concerned, we're just talking about it in terms of this movie and how this movie presents it. Before we get into it, what are our three good things? For anybody else who hasn't seen this movie, I don't think this is as widely seen as, say, like, A Nightmare on Elm Street or Scream, obviously. But three good things about Serpent and the Rainbow, reasons why we think you should check it out.
Okay, so I'm going like real granular on this one.
Please.
Number one, zombie bride.
Yeah. Everybody loves a zombie bride.
There's a zombie. It's wearing a veil.
Number two, just incredible nightmare sequences. Is that too vague?
I mean, surprise. Keep it vague.
Surprise. Wes Craven knows how to do an insane nightmare sequence.
Oh, maybe his best.
I think so.
Which is saying something for the man that created the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
Right.
Number three, another granular one, but I think, you know, I think so. You guys are going to agree with me here. Traditional wooden coffins. How long has it been since you've seen a nail driven into a coffin, y'all? It's been a while, and they have the classic coffin shape. It made me feel like, man, we've gone too far with coffins.
Oh, yeah.
This cylindrical, huge, ornate wooden box with the lining that we're doing, far too much.
Who's that lining for?
We're all gonna rot in the box. Let's just do the box.
I don't even want the box. I just want that burlap sack.
You want to become a tree?
Yeah, I just want to be tossed
skeleton
in a pit.
Holding a peach pit.
What are those? The corpse trails? Is that what they're called? Like, I think they're mostly like a European thing where they would.
Are
essentially...
you talking about like the haunted forest in China? Or...
No, I'm not talking about the haunted forest. I mean, like, I'm
Japan. I think
I'm talking about just like old timey shit where we just had a spot. Where we put the corpses and we let nature do its thing.
Like, you know, when a dog is sick and it goes into the woods to die. People used to do that.
Yeah. Let's treat our elderly with respect. Let's toss them in the bush.
Oh, boy.
All right. We're gonna throw in the trailer here for Serpent in the Rainbow. When we get back, we're going to talk about voodoo, baby.
From Wes Craven, director of A Nightmare on Elm Street. Comes a story of the forbidden world between life and death.
There's a door to the mystical. And you just walked through it.
Somebody brought him back from the grave. And I want to know how they did it.
Death is not the end.
I'll take your soul.
You think you can take these people's secrets and just walk away?
In the shadows of the imagination lies the ultimate nightmare.
Don't let them bury me. I'm not dead.
The Serpent and the Rainbow.
Man, don't you love seeing Baron Samedi in a horror movie?
The Nightmares VHS board game in me appreciates it so.
Like Nightmares, Serpent in the Rainbow, The Princess and the Frog.
Classic.
And that James Bond flick in New Orleans. All right, Wes Craven, Serpent in the Rainbow is currently sitting at a 6.4 out of 10 on IMDb, a 62% on Rotten Tomatoes. Let's see what the audience rating is on this one, because like that's probably mostly from critics way back in the day, 57% from the audience, and a 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
That's kind of fair, yeah. You know, kind of middle of the line.
I think that's been the general sentiment I've heard from people, like, yeah, this movie's pretty okay, and some people are absolutely nuts about it. I think, like, some of Wes Craven's B-sides, like Shocker and Deadly Friend, you know, it maybe doesn't...
Maybe.
it doesn't have as many explosive moments in the story, but, like, goddamn, there are moments of genuine horror in this that are some of the best work that he has ever done.
The sequences, the horror sequences, when they come, you are in a different film entirely.
Yeah.
You are served horror gold on a silver platter.
Oh, yeah. And they also, they sort of tease it immediately when they're talking about just the nature of the Haitian zombie that we're going to see. Like, we have these characters who have been brought back from the dead, but they live in the graveyard away from the living. And then they serve out the purposes of their masters by going into people's dreams at night.
That's so goth.
Fucking rad. God, I love it. Yeah, so Bill Pullman is like a Harvard scientist, bro.
He's the tiger.
he's a jaguar, I believe, is a spirit
He goes
animal.
On a an ayahuasca trip.
Pretty
he
much.
Discovers he's the tiger.
Yeah, and then a pharmaceutical company essentially sends him back to Haiti to investigate claims of people that have been brought back from the dead. They don't necessarily believe anybody's a zombie. They just think that somebody has given them a poison that is maybe the most powerful
brink of death. Without death, might be good for an anesthetic.
That was the word I'm looking for. Thanks for jumping in there. I was like, buffering. Yeah, we're looking for an anesthetic is the idea. Great setup. Like, we've got a character who was dead, who was buried. His family witnessed him being put into the ground, but now he's back. They just, like, found him wandering around. It's very clearly the same person. It's been confirmed, so he's got to go down and investigate.
So, speaking of investigating, I went on a little investigative trip this morning.
Oh.
Because, like most horror films, it started with a inspired by a true story, and
yeah.
I was like, sure,
bud.
But I looked it up. Serpent in the Rainbow, based on a book, a nonfiction book, mm-hmm. by a doctor. It's been...
Wade Davis or something like
it's
that?
It's been disputed as being a little fancy, frilly around the edges. Maybe not true. But
surprise, surprise.
A lot of this is accurate to what the doctor did. He went and he was like, I'm going to find this poison. There's this powder that's bringing people to the brink of death. And we're going to use it for an anesthesia. And it's going to be great. And it's made from an old pufferfish. And the film... is pretty loyal to that book. Apparently.
Okay, well, hold on a second. You're saying it's loyal to a book.
To a book that's maybe bullshit.
that's just like, oh, this is one of the most loyal adaptations of a Stephen King book, so it must be true.
Embellished is the word. It's a little embellished, maybe inaccurate, because they tested like the poison that the real doctor brought back, and they're like, there's some neurotoxin in mm-hmm. the pattern. They
from
were
the
like,
blowfish, obviously.
And they're like, we weren't able to find this neurotoxin. You're bullshit. I call bullshit, and that's basically where we're at. But I believe, and I think it's not disputed that what he did was true, that he got this powder. This powder exists in Haitian culture by voodoo priests, and it's got a recipe in the book, and the film
he put the recipe in the book.
You can make it. And the film is quite accurate to the actual recipe, like the scene where Bill Pullman and Mozart, the voodoo dude who
oh, this
I
guy's
love,
great.
Are quite accurate to the voodoo in the book only.
Mm.
There's a scene, it's a great scene, where they're crumbling the skull of a dead old woman.
Yeah, I fucking love it.
That was a replacement for the real recipe where they use a recently dead baby.
Oh, yeah.
So they brought that down for the R rating a little bit.
So another clever move from Wes, like, you can't put kittens in a blender, go back and listen to their episode of Crawl, and you can't use a dead baby, even though it's dead and it's...
Even though it's in the traditional recipe.
Yeah.
Two cloves of garlic? Nah, six.
What if that were like some people's complaints? Like, this isn't accurate to Haitian voodoo. We use babies, motherfucker. Okay, that's wild. That's crazy. Yeah,
so like, the neurotoxin is disputed, but everything surrounding it seems to be pretty genuine.
So correct me if I'm wrong, though. Like, the voodoo, the idea of a voodoo zombie is...
believed. Pretty widely accepted.
And it's pretty accurate to this movie, but it's like almost more of a psychological thing in a sense, like you poison a person, and then by all indication, they are dead. They are clearly present and alive, but vital functions, you know, outside appearance, they appear dead. They are buried. They're grieved by their loved ones. They experience being buried alive, and then somebody brings them back
several
days later.
Which is fucking traumatizing.
Yeah.
All of the talk and depictions of people being buried, the perspective from the grave with people
throwing dirt. Oh, and just like one single tear.
And these are, you know, pretty modest coffins, so there's a cross cut out in the front. It's not a window. It's not glass. So the dirt is, like, coming in and hitting them in the face, and just imagine being conscious for that. That would be,
Yeah, and then you leave them there for several days, you dig them back up, and then you make them believe that they're dead, and that you brought them back to life.
That's an element of zombie voodoo that I wasn't aware of, and I think is the real scary thing. It's not being brought to the brink of death and being reanimated. It's that you essentially become like a mind prisoner.
Yeah.
Like you are beholden to this voodoo priest, and that is a real element of the zombification that was happening that this doctor studied, and it's believed that they were just continuing to give them like micro doses of the neurotoxin or like hallucinogens to just keep them in this constant state of just like fucked up.
That's crazy. That's
nuts.
That's like the most twisted version of like the Manson shit.
I mean, but that is an existence worse than death. Like, oh, I don't want to be like a fucked up drug zombie.
Yeah, that's awful. But the idea that they, that like the wrinkle of this movie where they travel into people's nightmares is great. Because we also meet, it's Cristobal, right? Like that's the character's name?
Christoph.
We meet Christoph. He is the zombie that Bill Pullman's character is hunting.
Hunting? Seeking out!
My mistake, yeah. He's not necessarily hunting him. He's looking for him. He's searching for him. I love that everybody calls him Blank, because...
Blanc.
Well, yeah, fine. Blank.
Great French
Blanc.
John.
I'm sorry. Because it's essentially just like a whole bunch of people in Haiti going like, hey, what's up, white? It's hilarious. But they finally find Christoph,
who's a pretty interesting character. So we know that this zombification has been occurring. Bill Pullman, Dr. Allen, he is teamed up with Dr. Bouchamp, who is a Haitian doctor. So she's really familiar with these like recent zombie cases. And she shows him one. It's a woman who's been reanimated, but she is still kind of very rudimentary functions. Like she doesn't have speech. She's very like creepy as fuck.
Well, she creeps out Bill Pullman because she stares directly into his eyes and there's like a knowing glance. Like she's trying to warn
him. Oh, she's like, you're
something.
Fucked.
Yeah, basically.
You
right?
fucked.
Because he does seem a little haunted by this trip that he had gone on at the beginning of the movie. It was almost like a vision quest. He saw the jaguar, his spirit animal, but then he also saw the bad guy later in the movie. Like he kind of just like saw all the events unfold. He had a wrinkle of the future come to warn him.
But so him and the doctor are out seeking Christoph because he is a unique case in that he has speech, he's got presence of mind, he's got memory, and he can articulate what happened to him, what's happening to him, what's going on, how he's feeling, which seems to be very unique to the zombies.
Yeah, and he, Bill Pullman's character, he wants to take blood samples from Christoph to sort of see whether or not he's actually a living person or not. Like, is he dead and back, you know, alive again?
What drugs you on?
But they kind of dropped that. Either it was cut from the movie, because I heard originally this movie was a 3-hour cut.
There's a few choppy scenes.
There's a lot of mix-ups, yeah.
Where you're like, I think they left that blood in his room a little later.
Yeah, it's one of those like, we haven't had anything like scary happen, so maybe we just insert something here. We literally talk about it like 30 minutes later as though it just happened, but who cares?
And characters go on in next scenes and they don't address them. They're all wearing the same outfits from scenes previous.
But like Christoph's importance kind of disappears once we meet him. He shows up occasionally as just like this harbinger of you know, nightmares to come.
Yeah, he's an important wanderer in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
He wanders in and out of it, and he's great every time.
But in terms of Blanc's, you know, discovery and investigation of the powder that he's seeking, like, he's kind of just like, once he meets him, that's about it.
Yeah, and he's still kind of like, I call bullshit, zombies ain't real.
Yeah.
But I still want that powder.
Still want that powder. Well, I mean, if he doesn't show back up in America with the powder, whether the powder is real or not, he's not getting paid.
Yeah, he needs those funds.
Yeah, he's trying to do this as an agent of good, you know? Like, I think he's hopeful that maybe this powder is real and we can use it to save people. Like, I think in the back of his mind, he's
hoping...
We don't
elaborate how, but we're gonna...
Yeah, it's just, we're gonna use this... Oh, we're gonna save so many lives with this. Like, how? What are you talking about?
I'm not gonna use the voodoo for bad. I'm gonna use it to, you know... put people under to the brink of death.
Yeah. And, you know, despite the sort of like vision quest that he went on at the beginning of the movie, he clearly has a lot of doubts about the veracity of some of these claims.
His belief in voodoo is very, at the beginning, non-existent.
He's like, that's nice for you guys. Yeah, that's cool.
But then he starts getting haunted by mummified hands and zombie brides. And
yo!
He starts talking a different tune.
No, yeah, so like as he investigates this, he goes deeper and deeper and he becomes more affected by it. He becomes the target of a black magician named Patron. Is that the name? I keep wanting to say Peychaud because it's so close to Peychaud and I'm a big fan of Sazer X.
Patron,
yes, great character in this movie. He's like a policeman.
Yeah, so he's a political figure, but he also does bad voodoo.
Yeah, he's like a top, you know, police officer.
Captain is his official title.
He's a captain in the police force for a corrupt government that is, you know, on the brink of either being overthrown. Like, it's a dictatorship. So he's a figurehead in a power that is looming over the people pretty large. And he fixes his eyes on Blanc. He knows that what he's after.
I don't know why he's in Blanc's
There's
ship.
There's kind of no reason.
I think he's just like, you're rumbling around my town and I don't like it.
Yeah, that's basically it, right? Yeah, and so he starts to... the claim essentially is that Christoph is one of his zombies and that he is the ruler.
Oh, yeah,
master.
And he keeps their souls in a jar.
Yo, that's a fucking rat.
No, it's pretty good.
It's pretty great. And so as Bill Pullman gets closer to the powder and he's almost got his hands on it, he starts to get his dreams start to get invaded and he becomes like a target for the police just in general.
Real police, not dream police.
No.
The dream police.
No, I mean, these dream police are bringing like real corpse brides into his nightmares.
The dream police is just one corpse bride.
We get more than one corpse bride. It is the same corpse bride, but she shows up multiple times.
And she's great.
So good.
Every time.
Yeah.
She never disappoints.
The first time she shows up, Christoph essentially just like brings her to him and she like floats toward him in this like dreamy, smoky nightscape. And then when she lifts her veil. Oh, that's right. He lifts her veil because he wants to see who it is.
And it's a wedding, a white wedding.
She pulls her bottom jaw down and extends her mouth open. It's fucking gross. And a snake jumps out of it.
Spooky.
Oh, man.
My favorite zombie bride moment is just when her hand comes out of a bowl of soup.
Oh,
when he's
God,
back in the Americas.
It's such a small detail. It's so great.
So good.
He's not even asleep at that time. Like, these are hallucinations that are invading his regular day. Somebody at that dinner also becomes possessed and tries to
Deborah.
Stab him with a knife. Fucking Deborah. Yeah, no, these nightmare sequences are incredible. There's one in particular that I think truly one of the best things I've seen this year.
We had to rewind the movie. We watched it twice because we were just jaws on the floor.
Yeah. Again, hard to describe on a podcast because it's mostly a visual thing, but like Wes Craven does this incredible job of just making slight tweaks to an environment that like you don't realize what he's doing until like it hits you in the face like a bucket of water. Like, it's nuts. Like, the Bill Pullman is asleep in his bed. And then, like, the room just, like, slowly starts to change as he's looking at things, like, from cut to cut. He's looking through the window, and then, like, the slats on the window. And then in the next shot, all of a sudden, the camera turns sideways and we realize that we're in a fucking coffin. And the slat that he's looking through is the cross that's been cut out on the top of it.
Yeah, and the door to the room he's in turns into a coffin door. And then the wall comes up and meets him behind, so he's actually in a tight coffin.
Oh, and it starts filling with blood. It's incredible.
Just phenomenal.
Yeah, like Wes Craven clearly just knew. Like,
just had nightmares.
Just, that's the thing, right? Like, they are such perfect nightmares because they feel real until the rug gets pulled out from underneath you. Like, it's just like mild tweaks to your environment where you know something's not right, and it isn't until it's too late that you even notice, like, how far you are in
this
like, trap.
Just to talk about the nuance here, the coffin door that's still part of the room he's in before it's the coffin is painted pink like the room was, mm-hmm. And then it slowly among the shots goes to a wooden coffin door. Minor tweaks that like infiltrate to go from, you know, sleeping in a room to screaming in a coffin.
Yeah. And like when he's looking through the slat, he's seeing people filling a grave.
His grave.
I mean, the perspective is wrong, right? Like, because like we're looking at it from a completely different angle, and then dirt starts to fly through the window horizontally, and then the camera just like racks sideways, and we're like tight in a coffin. He's being buried alive. It's fucking amazing. Like, he clearly was shooting for the edit. Like, he knew what images he needed, because it's really just about stacking images, and it's like a fucking magic trick. It's absolutely insane. This week's episode of Nightmare on Film Street is brought to you by Diabolik DVD. You already know these guys. For 25 years, Diabolik DVD has been the source for horror, cult, and weird cinema to customers around the world. Diabolik offers a one-stop shopping experience for all your favorite labels, including Cauldron Films, Arrow, Synapse, Def Crocodile, Mondo Macabro, and many more from all corners of the globe. Whether you're looking for the definitive version of City of the Living Dead, or you're trying to upgrade your crusty old DVD of Cannibal Holocaust, Diabolik DVD is the owner-operated small business choice you've been craving. Shop online at DiabolikDVD.com and visit their sister company, Cauldron-Films.com. P.S. All orders are shipped in a box, because they're not jerks, and they know you don't want your Blu-rays damaged when you get them. That's DiabolikDVD.com, spelled DiabolikDVD.com. Get yourself some physical media, because there's no streaming service out there better than your own DVD shelf. Oh, it's finally Halloween, weirdos, which means it's time for you to get your butts to Sleepy Hollow. The Sleepy Hollow International Film Festival is taking over Tarrytown October 10th to the 13th for another year of spooktastic fun. This is truly one of the best film festivals that we have ever been to. We went the first year and it was just an absolute blast. There's nothing better than New England in October, and if you can watch a whole bunch of horror movies in the town where the Headless Horseman lives, that's how you want to spend your Halloween. This year, they've got a ton of movies at the festival, you know, including newer films like Hippo, which we saw at Panic Fest, and I'm just constantly thinking about that movie. The Activated Man, starring Tony Todd, and their closing night film, Getaway, the new Nick Frost movie. They're also hosting a 75th anniversary screening of the Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. They're playing Tim Burton's Sleepy Hollow and Ed Wood, including a sneak peek of a new Tim Burton documentary series. They've got a retrospective screening for Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes on a double bill with a making of documentary. They got something for everybody at this film festival. Like, they got stuff for kids. They got stuff for adults late night, too. If you want to watch a screening of Maniac with director William Lustig live in person, this is your opportunity. And the Sleepy Hollow Film Festival will also be featuring cocktails from Nightmare on Film Street's upcoming book, Cocktails from the Crypt. If you want a sneak peek, you want to taste some of these spooky concoctions that we've put together, they're going to be serving up drinks from the book at the Horse Feather Restaurant and Bar, a staple of Sleepy Hollow. They have a seat reserved for the Headless Horseman, and it's your first opportunity to try out some of the drinks in Cocktails from the Crypt, coming out in November. Tickets and info can be found at SleepyHollowFilmFest.com. And honestly, if you're anywhere on the East Coast or you've been looking for an excuse to visit family back in New York, you gotta go. That's happening October 10th to the 13th. And more info and tickets can be found at SleepyHollowFilmFest.com.
We might be too old for free candy, but we're not going to let that stop us from having a ghoul time. This October, we're playing Trick or Treat with the Spirits of Halloween over at the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club on Patreon.
Each week, we're pulling movies at random from our spooky mystery cauldron. It's a McDonald's boo bucket. And we're either going to be given a treat, that's a horror movie we really want to talk about, or a trick. a horror movie we hoped we'd never have to discuss in public.
Join us as we let the spirit of Halloween take the wheel and play Trick or Treat with the Nightmare on Film Street podcast, only on our Patreon at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub. That's nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Are you ready to get serious about your weight loss journey? Tried crash and burn calorie restriction? Considering the invasive strategy of GLP-1 injections like Ozempic? Slow down and consider a safer, easier, and long-lasting solution. Golo is clinically proven to work without the dangerous side effects of injections and fad diets. Golo's release helps your body combat the stress of dieting while controlling cravings and hunger. Minimize muscle loss and feel better with Golo. Just take one Golo release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. It's an effective and affordable plan to lose weight for good. There are no insurance hoops to jump through, no prescription needed, just sensible, effective weight loss and a healthier lifestyle on your terms. Get started on a healthier, happier, and more energetic you at Golo.com. 5 million people have already discovered a better way to lose weight. Join them and go to Golo.com. That's Golo.com today.
One of my favorite things, just in like looking up this film, was that Wes Craven was like, "This, you know, this isn't a straight horror movie. It's a political thriller."
Yeah,
like he can't help himself but be fucking terrifying. Like became a straight up horror film. This is a straight up horror film.
Oh man, there's a sequence in this movie where Bill Pullman is just like going, like walking down the hallway inside a prison, and all these arms are sticking out trying to like ask for help, but then they all start just like extending longer and longer and longer.
Freddy Krueger alleywheeling.
God, it's good. It's incredible.
Actually, there is a scene. It's like part of the vision quest in like the first opening bit where he falls down and a bunch of hands are grabbing him and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if they used the same apparatus from the Labyrinth.
Labyrinth? Yeah. That's exactly what it looked like. Man, just incredible sequences in this movie. Like, cannot give enough praise for the nightmare moments and the horror sequences in this movie. There's also a great fun moment. Like, if you're just looking for something fun to laugh at, you need a little bit of levity. There's a scene where the police try and torture Bill Pullman.
And they get him in the scrot.
Yeah, they drive a nail through his nutsack. It's hilarious.
So we don't quite know what happens there, obviously, because they don't show
We're supposed to assume they put a nail through his dick.
Yeah, based on all the screaming, you know, the threats of the nail and the penis.
Oh,
and
that's
then,
great.
But later, he elaborates, like, he's talking to
No, like, this is voiceover, wasn't it?
He's talking to his companion, and he's like, they got me in the scrotum. I'm fine. I'm intact, but they got me in the scrotum. Like,
later, they released me. Intact. Is that how he described
specifying.
It? Oh. Don't worry, I'm fine. We're still good.
Oh, man. Speaking of the voiceovers, though, like, what an era for voiceovers. We don't really do that as much anymore, but it is. Dear Diary, today
there's a lot of that.
I met the voodoo priest.
I think a lot of the time that gets added after the fact. Like, they've cut so much out of the movie where they're just like, oh, fuck, okay, well, we need
somebody to tell us what's going on.
We can cut, like, this whole 20-minute chunk, but we need somebody to come in and say something.
Yeah, and you can kind of go scene to scene, because it's like, oh, we met Christoph's sister, and she told us he was at the cemetery, so then we went to the cemetery.
Yeah, Mozart is the character who we eventually meet, who we, you know, he's a little bit...
slimy, but morally pretty okay.
But also, it's just like, here's just some guy from America that nobody's ever met, who's just like... give me your zombie powder. And he's like, yeah, sure, bud, no problem. Like, he basically just gives him rat poison is the idea. There's a little bit of sleight of hand where Bill Pullman tricks him into thinking that he's drank the whole thing himself.
Embarrasses him in the club.
Yeah, and then, you know, like, he gains his confidence. You know, they've got a mutual friend on the island. And, you know, eventually he leads him to a graveyard where they make the actual voodoo potion.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, I'll make you the real shit, but you have to do it with me, and it's pretty gross.
That's something that I love about it. I don't think he's... like, you have to make it with me because it's labor intensive or anything, because there's like a dozen people there. I think it's important to the process that you be the one that do it, because you're supposed to be the person using the powder. And the whole idea here is that it's a highly toxic powder that you like blow into somebody's face. It seeps in through their skin, through their eyes, their mouth, and everything.
It's a curse, essentially, with a tangible result.
Is it a curse, or is it actually a poison?
Well, no, but it's used like a curse. Like, you are essentially cursing someone to a life worse than death. They technically die, and then they become a zombie, and then you're supposed to basically like hold their soul captive
in a fucking fucking jar,
and they
man.
Become zombie soldier for you. So, like, that's kind of a curse.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Like, there's a weight to this. There's a cost to this. There's a lot involved. So, like, they put him through the ringer basically just to prove that he's legit and that he actually wants this. Because this isn't just something that you can roll up to, like, the pharmacy and just get over the counter, you know? Like, this is an involved process, and it's like Pet Sematary, right? Like, this is a pact that we are making together with the afterlife. And, like, this isn't just something that you fool around with. But he is just going to go ahead and bring it back to America, and they're going to put it in a machine. They're going to be like, oh, we just need like 5% of this, 2% of this, 1% of this. Maybe we'll find a substitute for the dead baby, and then we can we can use this to make, you know, perfect surgery anesthetic or whatever.
Like, yeah, you find the active ingredient. You're like, oh, we just need the puffer fish.
Eventually, like, the police close in on him. Like, just as the nightmares are getting awful, they frame him for murder. They basically give him an ultimatum. They're like, either you leave the country now or you stay and I make you a fucking zombie. Also, if you hang around, I'm going to kill your girlfriend, the doctor that you've been sleeping with, who's been trying to help you find this powder. And he goes back to America. He takes the offer. He gets the powder. He leaves. But he's still haunted by his experience. He can feel that there's something wrong. Like, there's a swelling in Haiti, culturally, politically, and he can feel
my
it back
girlfriend.
Home in America. Yeah, no, he's like, I've been trying to call her. She won't answer. And, you know, Jeffrey from Batman. What's it? Alfred from Batman's just like, I don't think you should go back, son. That's a horrible accent. What did I try doing there? Anyway, like, against all warnings and against all signs that he should probably not get involved, he heads back to Haiti. And it's from moment one, big fucking mistake.
He's immediately turned into a zombie.
Yeah, he's barely off the airplane. And they're just like, oh, you're dead now, motherfucker. But Christoph. He gets buried in the same graveyard that Christoph hangs out in. Christoph, yeah, Christoph. We have the whole sequence where he's buried alive. It's fucking great. Christoph helps take him out earlier than expected because Petrode is planning to have him rise from the grave 3 or 4 days later.
After his girlfriend's already murdered.
Okay,
so I do love, though, when they are burying Bill Pullman in his, like, zombification scene. He's like, haha, you fucked. In classic, you know, movie fashion where the villain is telling you his full plan, he's doing it over a grave. So we're from the perspective of being buried alive, and he's like, I'm going to behead your girlfriend.
Yeah, you have, you know, like, I'm going to behead your girlfriend in 18 hours. Unfortunately, you won't be arriving until 36. We won't even expect you if you happen to be coming in through the back door. That'll, of course, will be unlocked. You know, there's all that. Like, it's the James Bond moment where we're giving the whole plan away.
It's just funny to be doing it to, like, a corpse.
But isn't that the sinister part, though? Like, it's more sinister than doing it to James Bond tied to, like, an electric chair or something, because, like, of course James Bond's going to escape, but Bill Pullman's dead.
It's really creepy when he's on the operating table and the doctor's like, all right, write the time of death, and he comes in and he's like, don't tell
don't
anyone.
Worry, I'll take
don't
care
alert
of
the
this.
U.S. Embassy. Ha ha ha! And he's like, I got him.
He basically walks in and he's like, dibs.
And witnessing that, being a conscious corpse, would suck.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be like, no, give me to America.
The great thing, too, is that they are hanging over his coffin. But from Bill Pullman's perspective, he's already 6 feet underground. Like, when the camera cuts to his point of view, we're way deep in the ground. It's genius.
I mean, that might just be an editing thing.
But, you think so? You think this is a mistake? He's also only buried under, like, a half a foot of dirt.
Yeah.
It just makes it easier for him to get out.
They got a high water table.
But yeah, he's a fresh corpse. He's like a Bambi deer. Like, he hasn't figured out how to use his dead legs yet. And he's like,
he does zombie around.
Yeah. He can barely pick anything up, but, like, he's like, gotta get to my girlfriend before they machete her. And meanwhile, in the background, the dictator running Haiti is essentially just, like, fleeing the country, which essentially means that the police have no power anymore. The villagers are rising up. They're coming out to kill the cops, or at the very least drive them out of the city. So, like, there is a great dynamic here about, like, power shifting. And, you know, Petrode is essentially, like, he's losing his power religiously like his hold over his zombies and just
and
like
politically.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. So like, it's kind of like a Suspiria 2018 thing, where we have sort of like the power.
The shit out there is happening in here.
Yeah, and like, who's to say what's affecting what? Right? Like, is it really that the dictator is leaving, which has left him vulnerable for people to come in and stop him from performing
and open his canopic
rituals?
Jars?
Yeah, or is it that he's losing his religious hold? And that's what's affecting the larger political structure, right? Like,
yeah.
What wheel drives
what wheel?
But
that zombie bride, yo.
But that fucking zombie bride!
I have another fun fact for you. Actually, I want to shout out this article I read. It's really good. At Creepy Catalog, they wrote a really great retrospective on this movie. And the cinematographer, I think in the Blu-ray commentary or the DVD commentary, was talking about the scene where we're kind of introduced to, like, the voodoo culture. And we're at kind of like a night celebration. And there's a bunch of possessed people. One's eating a cigar. Full embers.
That guy was great.
There's another guy eating glass. There's somebody just letting tourists poke needles in his mouth.
I'm not cool with that.
Apparently, those were all legit, and they were possessed people, and they did like a whole thing before they started filming, and that was all real
stuff. So at this point, that's essentially just like a documentary.
Yeah, like they didn't provide him sugar glass. He was eating real glass.
Right on.
So
badass.
Yeah. Very accurate.
Yeah.
That shit creeps me out.
The end sequence of this movie is fantastic. Like, we're just sort of stacked with moment after moment where the perspective of everything completely changes. Like, there's a scene where Bill Pullman opens this is where we have the prison sequence with, like, the really creepy hands coming out after him. The corpse bride is you know, there. She's hanging around.
She's starting to become helpful, though. She's like, yo, get the scrot nail.
Yeah. She's like, we know what you really want to do. Like, that's the arc of the movie. Like, that's the big revenge moment. That's how he kills the soul of the bad guy.
Yeah, because he's already dead at this point. He's burned alive. John, you got your full body burn.
I got a full body burn, guys.
And he comes back. Great burn makeup on him. So good. And he's like, I'm going to fight you physically, even though I'm definitely undead at this point.
Well, his whole idea is that he's going to drag his soul to hell with him, right? I think is the idea.
But they're just in a fist fight.
They're just in a fist fight. And eventually, yeah, like the spirits.
And the zombie bride reminds him of his revenge.
Yeah. They tie him down to his torture chair, which is in his office.
My favorite thing about that torture chair is that it haunts Bill Pullman.
Yeah. Like, as he's walking through the room, it's like, hey, buddy. And it like turns to him. It basically chases him out of the room. And then when they come
back.
Yeah. And then when they come back, he's like, he's staring at it like, I don't know if I trust that fucking chair. Like, he's really, really cautious around that thing.
The chair scared him more than the voodoo did.
Yeah. But the way that they stop the bad guy, the way we get that full body burn before he comes back to have a fist fight with Bill Pullman, is they start smashing the jars for all these souls that he's collected. Like, these are all people that are just living in limbo, people that he's cursed, including Lucian, the hotel owner, who sort of like helps Bill Pullman and the doctor find.
Like the good voodoo priest.
Yeah, he's the good voodoo priest. All these souls come out and start attacking Pedro, and that's what essentially ignites him on fire, and he burns into a crisp.
But I think that's the rainbow part, because at the end, once Pedro is dead, there's like this like majestic ghostly light of like all of these people rising up, and they're
you're
like,
so right.
They're the rainbow. They're,
okay.
Also, it's kind of like the end of The Little Mermaid when Ursula dies
is
and
it?
All of the mermaids she's trapped that were seaweeds, we get to become people again.
A comparison we all drew.
The rainbow in us all.
Yeah, at the beginning of the movie, they talk about like the significance of the serpent and the rainbow being that the serpent represents earth and the rainbow represents heaven.
Up.
Yeah, and that humans, like everything exists between the two of them, but because humans have souls, they can get trapped in a sort of like between space where death is only the beginning.
There was some really great dialogue in this movie, and it was really insightful. There's a really great line that Dr. Duchamp says when she's trying to explain religion to Bill Pullman and like what religion is like in Haiti. And she's like, you know, for most of like for your religions, like God is in the sky and God is far. And she's like, but for us, he's in the sky, but he's also inside us. And so like that explains like these possessions and these rituals and these demonstrations of these holy acts that they're doing with and unholy acts that they're doing with their bodies. And that, I think, really proved to me the title. Like, that was the poem at the beginning didn't do it for me. But when she said that, it just, like, clicked for me. I was like, Oh, that makes so much sense.
There's also a great sequence in the middle where they're sort of, like, hiding from the cops. But they're hiding out in the forest. This is before one of the biggest nightmare sequences of the movie. And it's in the middle of a festival for the god Azrael. I think it's her as
the goddess of love.
Yeah, the goddess of love, which we talk about in the beginning of the movie. Like, they're having a celebration for her, a dance, and Duchamp gets possessed by her. And, like, they talk about how either, like, the two of them respond to each other in a way. And then there's
like having a patron saint, right?
Yeah, kind of. And, like, it's like her personal patron saint, but, like, she also seems very not into it at the time.
I just think she didn't want to go full possessy in front of Bill Pullman. She's like, I'll do my dance later.
But later on, like, there's a sex scene between the two of them in a cave.
And that's, like, unnecessarily slow-mo.
it does get weirdly slow-mo. But she looks possessed in a way that she did while she was dancing at the beginning of the movie. But, like, it is a goddess of love. And so it's, I don't know, it kind of just taps into the idea of, like, these gods, these deities, like, living inside of you, especially during, like, specific times. And so it's like, you would see other people in completely different areas of the world talk about being like, oh, I was possessed by the notion of love. Like, that's just, like, flowery language.
Well,
but, like, it feels tangible in these moments here.
And I think it's also, too, trying to show that we also have rituals in our culture. Like, sex itself is a ritual of love.
Yeah.
And in Haiti culture, maybe it evokes a deity. But for us, it evokes feelings. It evokes oxytocin. so there are very big similarities. Like, we actually perform rituals.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I really wish that we
sex
could see...
Sex is a spell!
That's a great idea. I would love to see the longer cut of this movie where they talk about that a little more. I had read that Wes Craven was saying, you know, he was very happy with that original cut, but it was very talky is how he described it.
I think you have to strike a balance between being an entertaining film and being, like, an anthropology essay.
And, like, I think that is what the magic of Wes Craven was in so many of his movies, because he knew what the target was. But he also understood that he was making a movie. And, like, this
gotta
is,
be entertaining.
Yeah, like, this is sometimes the thing that
hurts the
most.
Need a little razzle-dazzle.
Yeah, like, let's not forget that it's show business, and you can't have the show without the business, and, like, when people aren't going to respond to this if we're not getting butts in seats, and, like, people don't want to necessarily come see a documentary, they want to come see a fucking horror movie. And I would love if there was a release of this movie with a longer cut. I do like this cut the way it is, but yeah, I would love to see some more about it. I think what I really want is a killer documentary about Haitian voodoo.
You could read the book that this is based on.
I don't know if
on.
I necessarily want to read that book. But I might go for some further investigation.
I mean, if you want the recipe for zombie powder, you could go right ahead and get it.
I mean, that might be good for the TikTok.
You just need a fresh baby corpse.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a hard one to find out here
fish.
In Canada. I can find a pufferfish in any tiki bar. That's fine. So what'd you think of this as a first-time watch?
Yeah, I was so pleasantly surprised with this movie. I wasn't expecting so much traditional horror in the way that Wes Craven is known for, like that nightmarish practical special effects. Like, that was all banging. The concept and the theories and the themes were all fucking cool. So I'm going to go a 3 out of 4 with my rating.
Yeah, I'm also giving it a 3 out of 4 for sure. I don't really hear people talk about this one as much. And, like, he's a really respected director, so I just always assumed that, like, maybe people don't talk about it because, like, it's not that great.
I see it get recommended, but very specifically. Like, if you're looking for unique zombie movies or something in that sense, but you don't see it get widely recommended. Like, yeah, like, oh, Wes Craven movies to check out.
This was great. Like, this was awesome. Like, every time we watch a Wes Craven movie that's just been on the watch list that we haven't checked out yet, I'm always blown away by it. Deadly Friend, Deadly Blessing, Summer of Fear. Kim fucking loved Summer of Fear.
Horse Girl Horror!
And A Serpent in the Rainbow. Man, I'm so glad we finally crossed this off the list. This was great. This is also just a killer pick for, like, fall, autumn, Halloween vibes. Like, voodoo is perfect when you're getting ready for Halloween. But that's just our opinion, guys. Let us know what you thought of Wes Craven's The Serpent and the Rainbow, especially if this has been a longtime favorite of yours or if you're just recently watching it for the first time. We'd love to talk to you about this in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at nofspodcast.com/discord or on any of our social channels. You can find them all at nofspodcast.com/go. You'll find links to everything there.
We've also added some chats to our Patreon. You can join. There's some free rooms. You don't even need to subscribe. You don't need to support the show. Just join up. There's a chat room called Mom's Basement where we talk about horror movies. And if you do become a supporter of the show, there's a bunch of private rooms. We got a clubhouse where we chat horror movies we're watching, horror movies we recommend, all kinds of stuff there. That is at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
That's also where you'll find bonus episodes of the show. You need more horror to tide you over until next week. You need more nightmare. I sound like a really bad radio announcer. But yeah, if you need more horror movie discussion, you want to hear us talk about some of our favorite movies that came out this year in 2024.
And we got a bunch of Halloween episodes coming out right now.
Or if you want to check out the new Trick or Treat podcast series, we are talking about, we're either talking about movies we love and have been waiting to talk about on the podcast, trying to find an excuse for, or movies we don't want to talk about. It's either a trick or a treat. We pull a name from a bucket and we let the spirits of Halloween decide what we're talking about. You can find that at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
But until next time, I'm Kimmy.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Get ready to scream, shiver, and maybe even lose a little sleep. It's time for Nightmare on Film Street's 31-Day Horror Challenge. 31 horror movies, 31 days, 31 chances to win a spooktastic prize pack to help keep Halloween alive 365.
This year's prize pack includes goodies from Nightmare on Film Street's new upcoming book, Cocktails from the Crypt, 4K remastered copies of Demons and Demons 2, a Stephen King Blu-ray box set, Spirit Halloween lunchboxes, pumpkin carving kits, Halloween CD soundtracks, including the long out-of-print Monsters Speak, Nightmare on Film Street sticker packs, and more.
The rules are simple. Head over to nofspodcast.com/Halloween. Download the 31-Day Horror Challenge Movie Guide and post your Halloween watch list on social media using the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge to make this Halloween a night you'll never forget.
That's nofspodcast.com/Halloween and the hashtag 31-Day Horror Challenge.
What's your favorite scary cocktail?
If you've been searching for the perfect way to elevate your horror movie nights, look no further. Cocktails from the Crypt is here to satiate even the most bloodthirsty killers with a collection of chilling cocktails. Created by us, your favorite horror podcasters and all-round weirdos, this horror movie cocktail recipe book is packed with movie trivia, cocktail tips, and hair-raising drinks crafted to pair seamlessly with the most iconic movies the horror genre has to offer.
Cocktails from the Crypt features 60 sinister sips, each designed to transport you into the heart of your favorite horror films, including the Texas Chainsaw Margarita, Freddy's Boilermaker, and the Frankenstein Fizz.
Don't miss your chance to be among the first to own this ultimate horror movie night companion. Pre-order Cocktails from the Crypt now from your favorite retailer. You know, like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Bookshop.org, Chapters Indigo, Blackwell's, or you know what? Just head to nofspodcast.com/go. We've got all the links there for you.
And don't forget to follow Nightmare on Film Street on social media for exclusive sneak peeks and behind-the-scenes glimpses from the making of Cocktails from the Crypt.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale.
power weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.